Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And welcome to A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality they see below the surface.
Yes, indeed. And this week, we're going to talk about Valley of Bones by Michael Gruber.
There are plenty of surfaces to look at here.
It's a diamond. Yes, that was my
phone.
I'm sorry.
Glad you think yes. So.
No, it was... I'm just trying to think, you know, how would I introduce this book to somebody? It's a mystery book, but it is written in a way that I have never encountered before. There's really like four things going on at once, and it's almost like four different books because you've got something that it was historical, and then you've got a journal that somebody wrote that we'll explain, and then you've got one character's point of view, which is written in present tense. And then you've got what I guess would be the main character's point of view. Mm-hmm. His name is Jimmy Paz in a past tense. And, that's a list of things that you're not supposed to do. You know,
is
when
it?
You go in there to,
that.
You know, when you go to writing class, they say, don't do these things. But it's unbelievable how well it worked. I went right through it. It was something.
I feel is now that you say that, and the interesting thing is I didn't notice it.
Really?
And usually I do notice if somebody's writing in present tense. I don't usually like that, generally. And I think because you're switching back and forth from points of view so often, and I'm sure the author had a reason for doing that because the person who's thoughts are in present tense. She's a much more tentative person. You are really feeling all her insecurities and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy Paz is more, he is stronger. He is more directed. Even when he's unsure, he's more directed. And I wonder if that has something to do with how the narrator is talking about him.
It's possible. But I know that present tense gives you this really immediate, almost on edge kind of a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So you could definitely be right. He just thought, well, this person should be present tense. And, it's interesting, you know, that he's changing points of view like that. You know, he just leaves a space and then on to a different point of view. And it's really between when we're not in the journal, the points of view are really between a character named Lorna and a character named Jimmy Paz. And, he flips between the two.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
He does tend to have Lorna and Jimmy's sections broken up either by Emmylou's confession, which is in italic because it's handwritten, or this older story, which is in a different typeface and bolder and set in very differently.
Okay, that's interesting. You know, I read it on the Kindle. I was in italics on the journal, and I could certainly tell when I was in the historical pieces, which were usually very short.
Right.
There were times in the book where I just had a space, and then I was into Lorna's, you know, like it was in Jimmy Paz's point of view, and then just an empty space, and then straight into
Let's
her point of view.
Here. Oh, yeah, you know what? You're right. It does do that. But he generally, I guess because he would start off with, you know, Jimmy Paz did this, and then it would say, Lorna has been feeling out of sorts for a week or so. So
yeah.
I guess I didn't really think about that there weren't any cues. But you're right. He would just have a little bit of space and then moving on.
And then, you're right in her head.
man.
And boy, does it work, you know?
Yeah, it's a head I didn't really care to be in necessarily. Not that anything was bad, but after a while you're just like, would you get a grip, woman? You know, you're so fearful and tentative and stop it, and I hate this. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
Yep.
Anyway, let me really quickly tell the story.
Please do.
Although I guess if anybody's listening, they probably read it. But basically the story starts with a young cop, Tito Morales, who has been called to a fancy hotel for a disturbance that no one can figure out why he was called there once he gets there. So it seems like it was a prank. And as he's standing outside the hotel, a body falls 10 stories splat right in front of him. And he notices there was no screaming, so he calls it in as a homicide. And that's when Jimmy Pez, a homicide detective, shows up. And when he goes up to the dead man's room, he finds a woman there who's on her knees, seemingly talking to herself. And when he asks her who she's talking to, she goes, "Oh, St. Catherine." He goes, "What?" Or Catherine. He goes, "Well, who's that?" And he goes, "Well, St. Catherine of Siena." So that's not something you see every day. And she wasn't even aware anybody was in the room to be thrown out. So the automatic assumption is that she's crazy. And they find later that there were ties between them. And she admits it. This lady's name is Emmylou Dieteroff. And she's evaluated for her sanity. And that's where Lorna Wise comes in. She's a psychologist who specializes in this sort of thing. So after they establish that she's really not suitable for trial, or actually what they do is they say there's certainly a question about this because she's, Emmylou's continually talking about God and the devil and saints, and they're all like, that's nuts. So she is sent to a psychiatric institution for evaluation, and Lorna wrangles the chance to talk to her because she's somehow drawn to her. And that's how Lorna and Jimmy encounter each other. And from there, what they do is in asking Emmylou to tell her side of the story, how she knows this guy, she says, "Well, I will write down the story for you, and I need 4 notebooks, and they need to not be spiral because I lie. I'll tear pages out. So you have to have something where you can see if I've torn the pages out." So right up front, you're told she's going to lie, although I forgot about that partway through.
So did I until you just mentioned it.
Yeah, I loved that detail about here's the kind of notebooks you have to have.
Right.
And after that, what you see is Jimmy doing the investigation, Lorna doing her evaluation and her regular life, how they encounter each other. And those stories, as we've said, are told, they're interwoven. You go from story to story. And along with that is a historical excerpts from a historical book that is from about the founder of the order of nuns that Emmylou belonged to at one time or encounters at one time.
Right, yeah.
The Sisters of the Blood. Shoot, I should have written it down. I did look it up to make sure there was nothing like it. I couldn't really find anything like it.
Yeah,
so Nursing Sisters of the Blood of Christ.
That's it. So it is not real, right?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. And it's a thriller / mystery. It's hardcore about some of the violence and stuff, although I felt removed enough that it didn't really bother me because Emmylou's story in particular, she has a very, very difficult childhood and young womanhood. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's a victim of a lot of people, but she doesn't see herself as a victim.
Yeah, sexually graphic. I mean, it could be more graphic, but sexually difficult life for sure.
Yeah, and you're not getting details of what happened, but the fact that it's brought up all the time because that's her story, so that's difficult. But in the process, what happens and what I found so fascinating about this book, I read it right after it came out in 2005. Because I'd seen a review in Crisis Magazine. That was back in the day.
That's funny. I was curious about how you encountered it. So that's something, yeah.
And they never reviewed fiction, but they reviewed this and said it had a really odd, you know, unusual Christian element. They found it very redemptive, very interesting. And also I had seen reviews in like maybe the Dallas Morning News, things like that. And so I got it and was like blown away. And this Catholic element is... it suffuses the book.
Yeah, it's a pervasively Catholic book, no doubt. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's everywhere.
Oh yeah.
Even in that scene that you described, where Jimmy Paz goes up to the room and Emmylou is there talking to somebody, and he asks her, "Well, who's Catherine?" I've got it highlighted. She says, "Catherine of Siena," and he says, "As in saint." So you know right away that he's Catholic,
right?
He's got that background. So and he. He's not quick to throw that away. partially due to a previous experience. And now, did you read, this is the second book. It's not as if it's mm-hmm. necessary to read the first, because I haven't and had no problem with the second. But did you read the first?
I did. I read it after I read this, and I remember really liking it. It is suffused with voodoo. Mm. But he, as he does here in this book, he treats it seriously.
Right, right.
As a way that people live and believe, and that it actually is true.
Right.
And because voodoo is built on the bones of Catholicism, it's a bit in this book also.
Yeah, I definitely want to read that as well.
Yeah, I need to reread it. I put it back on my reread list. And then I did, there's a third book. I did not really like the third book because he adds a point of view that is from the point of view of the, I can't remember if it's a killer or basically the bad guy.
Uh-huh.
And he lies to you in a couple places. And I'm like, no, I don't appreciate lying. Hiding is one thing, obfuscating is another. And I can't remember what it was, but anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
I disapproved.
Okay, interesting. Interesting.
You may love it.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. So, yeah, here's a typical Jimmy Paz moment. In his first meeting with Lorna. Now, again, Lorna is someone who is evaluating Emmylou. So she's like a psychologist. And she talks about, let's see, I'm figuring out where to start here. There's a lady here named Cheryl too. You know, Lorna's like, you know, lucky me. She's like, lucky me. And Cheryl says, no, this is right. She looks up, cups her hand to her ear. What's that you say? No lie made in heaven? Well, lawsy me. This isn't Jimmy Paz's thing. But anyway, she says, so this is Cheryl, actually. She says, you may laugh, but I got a good feeling about this. And let me slip a little professional note into your file, honey bunch. Us Catholics talk to the saints all the time, and sometimes they talk back. You need to find out some more about Emmylou's religious background before you toss her among the lunatics.
Right.
And I liked that line a lot.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
In fact, there's another, you find a lot of people who will just casually bring up their faith like that based on the situation. At one point, there's a nurse who, of the psychiatric place where Emmylou is, and an incident has happened. And Lorna goes, what did I just see? And the nurse, and I didn't mark this, but the nurse says something like, well, you know, I'm Baptist or whatever. And so based on that, I would tell you that we just saw an unclean spirit cast out. But because I'm a nurse in this institution, what I'm going to tell you is we saw an incident like this. It was an epileptic attack and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. So it's like they know what they're looking at, but they're like, well, that's not what we're going to say. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Emmylou is fascinating throughout the whole book. I mean,
oh my gosh.
She went through hell of a lot, and then, but yet is kind of an amazing person, really.
She herself is not very lovable, mm-hmm. but by the end, you kind of are in love with her.
Right, right. And she's pretty strong,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially, you know, for having gone through all of that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I found her really interesting the whole time.
Yeah, because when she's talking about, oh, just anything, she doesn't filter out the stuff that most of us would filter out in a conversation with people who aren't like, you know, between you and me, we might talk about faith a lot more than if we're talking to people who aren't Catholic or aren't Christian. And she just lets it all hang out. Oh, God does this because of this. Oh, the devil that because of that, you know. And she talks about the devil all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting because there are a couple of instances when, fairly early on, when she makes it really clear because she's in a sense, I suppose, possessed. He's just not always present.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you read about this stuff, I mean, I really got freaked out by the two instances where one is where Jimmy Paz sees the devil and essentially winds up taking on a bit of that evil himself, and it starts popping out. And I kind of got freaked out, exorcist style.
Yeah, me too. In fact, that's where I thought the whole book was kind of headed.
I couldn't read it at night after that.
Yeah, just amazing. What was the second part?
Well, the second one was when Lorna sees the devil. Is that okay. What I was saying?
Yeah, you said Jimmy Paz is when he saw. You said there were two spots that really.
Oh yeah, the other one is. Oh, let me see, page 125. I loved this, and so let me just read it. It says, "Okay, Emmy Lou," says Lorna. "Let me get this straight. You think the devil that was in you jumped out of you and into Detective Paz? Mm-hmm. And that would mean he's no longer in you, right?" Lorna is looking at the woman as she says this, and so she sees something remarkable happen. The person she has been talking to disappears and is replaced by someone else. The blue eyes turn from mild to icy. The very bones of the face seem to recompose themselves into something less or more than human. Lorna is familiar with the expression, "it made her blood run cold," but has heretofore considered it a mere figure of speech. But it is actually, she now finds, a good description of what she now feels. The new Emmy Lou says, in quite a different voice, one that seems to penetrate Lorna's head without using her eardrums at all, "It don't work that way, honey. My name is Legion." And she smiles, showing more teeth than Emmy Lou Dudoroff actually has in her mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever they throw out the Legion, man, that is tough.
And it's the thing about she smiles, showing more teeth than Emmy Lou has in her mouth. And you're gosh. Like, oh, no.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But, and so Lorna's almost screaming, almost passing out. She leaves as fast as she can. And then later she's like, oh, it was, because Emmy Lou then kind of passes out. She's like, oh, it was an epileptic fit. That was it. So she's busy rewriting what she saw.
Yeah.
And that's what Jimmy Paz does, too. And he, in the back of his mind, is going, I know what I saw because I've dealt with this kind of thing before, but I'm going to just ignore it.
He ignores it for, like, a different reason. He's like, I need to be able to cope.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, I understand this, but she's like, well, I guess it's maybe for the same reason, but, you know, I felt like she honestly didn't believe what she saw. She really, that was the difference between them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She just couldn't take it in. And so while they're doing all this investigating, this is a continual strain. And that's just not what you see in a thriller usually, because Emmy Lou will be talking about this or that and some brutality she's been subjected to. And she talks about it fairly, I don't know, I don't want to say casually, but it is almost casual, I guess. And, then she'll just slip in something like, well, I didn't feel the pain of those people around me. Says the devil, when you're enthralled to the devil, you know, he didn't care about the pain of human existence, so why would you? And then she just moves on. And you're just like, wow, what an excellent point. And how odd to have it show up at this point in this book.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You know, she was constantly saying things like that. Mm-hmm. So she's writing this journal, and then you get to read most of it anyway. And she uses, like, run-on sentences and things. it was neat. It was neat how he did it.
Yeah, because she's one of these people who she grew up hard scrabble and with horrible people using and abusing her or not caring about her who should have. And at the same time, she's a voracious reader.
Right.
She loved to read early. And so she's continually reading the classics. And as she's reading these books, she's absorbing these ideas, and they're the only basis she has really for her own philosophical ideas. And so finally she falls into the hands of somebody who loves Nietzsche. And so she really believes it. Mm-hmm. You know, there is nothing, just man, and man's awful, all these various things, whatever it is that he knows or talks about.
Right.
And it was interesting to me thinking about how we talk about books and how they influence us or change our thinking or enlighten us. This is the exact same kind of person, except without anyone to give her any guidance.
Mm-hmm.
Even when she was whoring on the streets, she was finding a place where she could, like, you know, buy 10-cent books.
Yeah, that's right.
The biggest book she could.
Yeah, and I like, you know, here's a little part from late in the book. So let's see, who is speaking right here? Lorna is. So Lorna says, Amy Lou, even if you assume that spiritual forces are involved here, it still doesn't make any sense. Why did God wait for just that moment to cure Horace? Why didn't he cure him before he murdered two women? Why not before he hurt a couple of people right here on the ward? Diderof waits a moment before answering, a peculiar look on her face, like a maiden aunt just asked by a child where babies come from. Well, you know, why is not a question we like to ask of God. It opens up the whole issue of theodicy. And you know Milton wrote a zillion-line poem about justifying the ways of God to man, and I'm not sure how successful he was except to make people admire Satan. She taps the Bible again. And then there's Job, of course. I'm sure you're familiar with An Answer to Job by C.G. Jung. Have you thought at all about my dream with the giant Twinkies? It's relevant, don't you think? So we do have to explain the dream about the Twinkies, but that was her.
I have that one marked. In fact, I think I actually put that into Happy Catholic, that book I wrote, because I just loved that so much, where it really struck me, because this is when she's, she says, Dr. Wise, this is Emmy Lou earlier talking to Lorna. She says, Dr. Wise, I know you want to help me, and I appreciate it, but we might be getting ourselves all crosswise if you're looking at my life from that point of view, like, because Lorna's been saying, well, after what you've been through, no wonder you've got problems. You're thinking of all the bad things that happened to me as traumas, leaving psychological scars that grew into a mental disease, which you think I have. I look at them as afflictions sent by God to attract my attention to him. Can I tell you about a dream I had once? And so what she basically tells Lorna is she had a dream that she was getting a tour of heaven, and there was a tour guide who was an angel, but they were both dressed in, you know, jumpsuits and hard hats. They were going through a big industrial type shed where there was a big machine, and there's a conveyor belt coming out, and on the conveyor belt there were rows of golden bricks that kind of looked like giant Twinkies. And when they get to the end, they fall off. And so she looks to see where they're going, and there's a huge hole in the floor, and she can see, you know, the clouds and the sky and the earth. And so she asks the guide and says, well, what are those? And he said, well, they're blessings. And she's thinking, ah, oh, this is great. God's showering blessings down. So then they go across an alley and into another shed, and there's the same kind of machine, conveyor belt, the same Twinkies falling through a hole. And she goes, oh, those are more blessings. And he says, no, those are afflictions. And I said, oh, but they look just the same as blessings. And he said, they are the same.
Yep.
And one of the big themes of Emmy Lou's story and way of thinking that I don't know if these other people ever really absorb it. She just keeps pounding on this because it's just such a part of her, which is that suffering is a gift from God meant to call your attention to him. And that the devil gives you, she goes, everybody likes to act like he's mean, but he's nice. He gives you the good stuff. He tempts you to the good stuff because then you're comfortable. God is waking you up. And that made me think of this quote that I came across several months ago, and I just love it. And you kind of have to be careful with it because it kind of raises something that this whole book does, which is people don't like to talk about God sending suffering to get your attention, because that's not how we think of a nice, kind God. Well, St. Catherine of Siena, in the dialogue, which is her recording what God told her, one of the things God said was, my love permits these temptations, for the devil is weak. He can do nothing by himself unless I allow him. So I let him tempt you because I love you, not because I hate you. I want you to conquer, not to be conquered, and to come to a perfect knowledge of yourself and me. And it goes on to say that it's only by this sort of thing that you're strengthened, because you have to overcome the temptations. Right. Or suffering.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the point of the book. It mentions that a few times.
Which I thought, I went, oh, it was St. Catherine of Siena. I wonder if that's what he came across that made him think about all this stuff.
That's right. That permeates this whole book, doesn't it? The suffering and the meaning of suffering. Or I'm trying to find a quote where they talked about the use of suffering. Let's see. Well, there's one that I liked, Amor Fati, I Love Your Fate. A friend of mine used to say that the secret of happiness is, you know, acceptance.
of your fate?
Yeah, yeah, and that could involve suffering. In fact, most of the time it does, doesn't it?
Right. Well, and I think the thing I found kind of the thing that's troubling when you think of talking about this in order to bring other people into the conversation, like people who are listening who don't understand this point of view, is we're constantly trying to defend God against this idea of why is there evil? And it's like, well, God didn't create evil. Evil is an absence of good.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a positive thing of its own. And so the way I tend to think about it a lot is, well, God didn't make that car accident happen that killed somebody. It was because of this person not paying attention. It was because of all these things. And that's true. But at the same time, there's also this idea that look at how many times in the Bible people are suffering, and they're suffering because it's necessary to get people's attention, to remind them that God exists. And a lot of the time when we come to a greater knowledge of ourselves and God, it is during those horrible times. So it raises this question of, does God send suffering? Sometimes yes and sometimes no, I guess is my answer. Or, I guess people say, nothing happens that he doesn't either make happen or allow to happen.
Right. Yeah. St. Catherine said allow, right? That's what she said. That was her words. Yeah.
And that's one of those things that goes back to the really old school way of looking at God that's not very popular. But when you see how Emmy Lou talks about it, it kind of starts to come down to what, and I wish I've got it marked here somewhere, what the head nun or the mother superior, whatever she's called, tells her about there's inevitable suffering in life. Mm-hmm. It's what you do with it that's interesting. Every life has suffering. There's nobody special. Nobody, and you can't get away from it. And she says, oh, you have been, let's see. You have been cruelly treated and betrayed. Your childhood has been stolen. The world is often une pâtisse émerdée, a shit pie. But this is known. This is boring. The only interesting thing is how we use the suffering that is inevitable in life.
Hmm.
Yep. To me, that's the heart of Catholicism's attitude to suffering. It's like, I don't know if it matters where it comes from. The point is that we all experience it. And Catholicism is so great because you can offer your suffering up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, to Christ, to God, to use how he will as an extra sacrifice joined with Christ.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's not wasted,
right,
in a sense.
Right. She confirms that. She quotes Simone Weil. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing her last name correctly. W-E-I-L. In a conversation between Emmy Lou and Lorna again, Emmy Lou says, yes, Simone Weil, you know who she was, don't you? And Lorna, it says, oh, sure, Lorna lies. Well, she says that the pure love of God means being exactly as grateful for your afflictions as you are for your blessings. It's an interesting way of looking at the world, isn't it? And then later on, she says, Weil said about the greatness of Christianity being not that it provides a supernatural relief from suffering, but a supernatural use for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's exactly what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. And I know that in my case, and since we're talking about a book about temptations and being scared and the devil and all this kind of thing, I recently had an experience where I was really I had a terrible dream. I woke up and I was in a horrible frame of mind and I was like, this doesn't feel normal. But instead of like cringing away from it and going, oh, help, you know, somebody help me, I kind of went, and it wasn't because of this book, it was because of some other stuff I'd been reading that was similar. But I just went, you know what? Is this sent to help me know who you are or myself better? Then, okay, I welcome it. I don't enjoy it, but I'll take it.
Hmm.
And then I got up. like it's a reading. I mean, there's no point in throwing myself on the cross if I don't have to be there. But but it was that whole attitude that helped me turn it all around, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'd been reading all that stuff. And a lot of the times, all that stuff is in your attitude. Are you offering it in the right way? What are you giving God to work with? Are you going to let him have his way? Or are you going to insist on yours? I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense. You're just making me think about a lot of current, what do you call them, philosophers or just thinkers about how to live your life in the modern world. You know, people, you know, like planning type people.
Oh, right.
You know, talking about how attitude is what gets you through everything. You know, how many times have we heard, you know, another person can influence you only as much as you let that person.
Yeah.
Right. So, but it's interesting that it's coming from Catholicism as well. It was already there.
I'm trying to remember if it was St. John Vianney or I think it was him who he said the way his story goes is that one of the things he had to suffer was every night, you know, the devil would visit and sound like a huge train and a dog barking. And there's always all this noise. And somebody was visiting him one night when that had all started up, but he wasn't in bed yet. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, my goodness, what is that? And he goes, oh, it's the dog. But as long as you don't get inside of the chain, it doesn't matter. All he can do is make noise, you know?
Yep, yep.
And that's kind of the attitude. And I know this makes this book sound so odd, and I guess it is so odd, us just talking about this aspect, but it was such a huge part of it.
It really was. It really was. And that and the thing that you mentioned before about how people are presented with things that are maybe not explainable and that they just explain using, you know, science or whatever it might be. It's just like, well, you know, that doesn't fit into my mindset, therefore I need to ignore this, or therefore I'm just going to explain it,
right,
you know, using this. But I think that those two things were the main themes of the book.
Yeah, you know? Which is kind of interesting because there was this whole huge, the big plot, obviously we started off with, you know, this is way past spoiler territory. There was never a non-spoiler territory, I guess. But, you know, the huge plot of the book is about oil and the Sudan and the, is it the CIA or the FBI or Homeland Security or, you know, some government agency that's, you know, up to shenanigans and influencing things behind the scenes and coming after different people to the point where, you know, Jimmy, Paz and Emmylou and Lorna all have to go on the lam, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, there's the whole actual thriller mystery aspect, but the spiritual aspect is so great and infused. And I mean, there's even a voodoo ceremony that afterwards Jimmy's like, I don't want to talk about it. She's like, what did they do to you in there? I don't want to talk about it. Well, I'll tell you, you know, and then Lorna had, you know, and basically the Loas are showing up. They're riding their mules, you know, or whatever they call them. They're human people that they're there, that they transform them. And so, and all that stuff kind of works together.
Yeah, it does. And again, you know, we're describing it. It doesn't seem like it should work, but it does.
I know.
It's fascinating.
Just, yeah, but I loved a lot of the little things about, like, Jimmy. Like, you know, in the first book, it's more, there's more about his mother and the rest, the Cuban restaurant that they have. And but he shows up and he does work in the restaurant sometimes for her. I mean, sometimes he has to go, Mom, I'm investigating a murder. I can't help with the lunch list. Leave me alone. Yeah. I'm kind of important.
That's funny.
There's a whole theme of what's it like to be Cuban in America and Americanized in America between Jimmy and Tito Morales, who becomes his partner for a little while.
Right, right.
He's a pretty minor character. I thought he was going to be more important, but that's kind of touched on.
But it was the spiritual aspects that caught me for sure. I mean, it's just things, you know, like even at the beginning, I mean, I highlighted this thing where she's being interviewed initially, and she says, oh, I'm tired. I'm so tired of using this. I thought it was over, that he didn't have a use for me anymore, that I'd be let alone to live in peace. And now it's all starting again and people are going to get hurt. And it just says, W, who's using you? And then it says, silence, 32 seconds. Who's going to be hurt? Anyone, anyone around me, maybe you. And the devil is going to make this happen to hurt people? And she says, or God, it's a crossfire. You can't understand this. It won't fit in your kind of head. I just love it. That's a good line.
Well, yeah, because there's that one point after, because, you know, later on when she's telling the part of her story in the fourth notebook, so it's getting down to what really happened, and she's in the Sudan, and she has basically become, or she's becoming at that point, I guess that night, that's the vision where she becomes God's prophet to these people, right? Mm-hmm,
right. Yeah.
And she's like, and so St. Catherine was there, and her dead friend was there, who says, oh, we're not ever dead. You know, we're still around you. And she goes, and the shiny man was there, which is the devil.
Mm-hmm.
But she calls the devil, and she goes, and he congratulated me because now we were on the same team. And I'm like, so that's kind of a Book of Job situation where he's not evil and against everybody. He's the advocate.
Right.
He's allowed to do his stuff because let's see what happens. You know, well, we'll test. If you want to test Job, okay. You know?
Yep, yep.
But, yeah, it got wild. I mean, she's taking over a country with her, you know, villagers. And
yeah, my gosh. So, yeah, she starts off in a home. She's being abused. She ends up on her own on the streets. She's a prostitute that reads. Mm-hmm. Then she ends up in a whole other country as a prophet of God. And she was in a convent. It's quite an amazing story.
Yeah, she was in what were they? They weren't cultists, but they were where she learned to use the guns and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Right before the convent was, that was the guy who was all into Nietzsche, where it was basically a bunch of people in, was it Tennessee or Virginia, I guess.
Yeah, something like that.
But they thought the end of the world was coming. So it wasn't really a doomsday cult, but they were ready. So they were all weaponed up and,
yep.
You know, that kind of thing. Yep. So she had all these odd experiences, but they all led up to her being prepared for that. And then here she is, this murder happens.
That's another aspect too, isn't it? The fact that your previous experiences prepare you for your next thing.
Yeah.
And that can be remarkable. You know, wasn't there something about, you know, series of accidents? Yeah, God speaks to us in Scripture and through our inner voice, but he also speaks to us through a conspiracy of accidents. George mm-hmm. Santayana said that, and he was at Harvard. That has to be...
She's continually quoting people.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the... Jimmy Paz mentions that at the very end when he's asking Lorna to marry him, essentially, mm-hmm. and... because she's pregnant.
I've got
and
that he goes, well,
I guess I'll have to marry you and give up my dream career on the stage. No, I'm not kidding. He's on the phone with her. No, listen to me. It's not a question of pressuring. Pressure doesn't even begin to describe it. Ever since that asshole got tossed out the window, my whole life has been on a railroad track with somebody else driving. All I've been doing is looking out the window at the scenery going by. Don't you feel that way? She did, and told him about Emmy Lou's phone call before they said goodbye. So, yeah, it's that thing of you look back at some point, you're just like, I don't even know what's going on, but here I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Emmy Lou near the end says something similar. She says, you want to believe that there, and she's talking to Lorna, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You want to believe that there are giant wheels turning, deep games being played, and there are, but not by man. God has preserved me in wonderful ways and done his will through me, using what means were at hand, including the plots of evil people. You know, God really wants to talk to us. He tried Scripture. He tries the still small voice. But we're all unbelievers now, so he mainly speaks to us through a conspiracy of accidents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, and it also kind of points out how result-oriented we are when we think about God. I mean, and it's that whole thing of... you know, well, then why does this happen? Why does that happen? We don't always understand. And it occurs to me, I was reading something recently that made me really kind of focus in on the point of, if there is God and if he created the universe, what kind of gall do we have to go, explain yourself to me? before I'll believe in you. So.
Yeah, that's and, in Job.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not saying anything to anybody who feels that way because I was mm-hmm. that way. I'm the one who went, well, prove it. Get me a house. Then I'll know you're there. I mean, I am number one in that line. I get it. But it just kind of made me go from the other side. I'm like, oh, I can't. Boy, he does protect fools, you know. but at one point when she's and I think this is during that same conversation, Lorna's got cancer. And she's like, well, will God cure me if I pray? And Emily says, well, I don't think it works that way, but it doesn't hurt to pray if I'll pray for you. She's like, oh, what's the point? And she says, every plane that goes down must be screaming with prayers, but the plane still crashes. And Emily says, that's true, but if any of them are praying sincerely, they're praying for God's mercy in their final moments. That's really the only thing we can pray for, you know. Thy will be done, and let me align myself with it.
Wow, yep.
And I thought, that's... In a sense, I mean, this book, I don't know how this book was so wise.
Yeah.
Good job, either. Michael Gruber. But I mean, he really nailed the truths. I mean, when he's talking about Catholicism, he even got the kind of the nuns who were here, we'll do this stuff. We kind of don't really always like the men running the church, you know?
Yeah, right.
But we're going to just do it anyway. We don't care because we believe in Jesus and this is still his church. And so we're just going to go along with everything. And yeah, I mean, that's that whole attitude of a certain kind of religious order too.
Sure, I mean, sure.
He really nailed it.
He did. Yeah, and I have from my own quote journal, the book of Job, chapter 38. Who is this that darkens my counsel with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I will question you and you shall answer me.
Oh. Is that where were you when I made the world?
Yeah, exactly. But it's just what you just said. It's like, you know, who are we to question, right?
Yeah.
But there it is.
He doesn't answer any of Job's questions. He just says, let's get a sense of perspective on this whole thing. But he does love Job.
Right.
You know, and that's clear at the end of it. It's even if Job could never possibly ever understand him. And Job says, yeah, a good one. Got nothing. You're right. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. I'm miserable. Fine.
Oh, that's funny.
And, you know, how many times do we have to be reminded of that? I'm like the three friends who... You know, well, I've got a lot of good reasons, but of course it hasn't happened to me.
Right, right.
And you're sitting in the middle of it.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, let me explain to you why this you should feel good about this, right?
Yeah.
And there was a quote from C.S. Lewis. You get into dangerous territory, like you said this earlier, but you get into dangerous territory when you talk about suffering and things. Because, you know, and C.S. Lewis said something like, you know, don't talk to me about the consolations of religion or I'll think that you don't understand. And that's really so true. That's why it's tough to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's funny too because I just finished reading Dombey and Son by Charles Dickens.
That's right.
And there was something in there that it just took one little section and I suddenly looked at that whole book a completely different way, and it's
is that what you put on your blog the other day?
Was that the one about May I say, Florence? Said Florence, let's that you see. Grieved. Yeah,
that's it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, may I say, said Florence, that you grieved to hear of the afflictions he has suffered? Not, she replied, if they have taught him that his daughter is very dear to him, he will not grieve for them himself one day if they have brought that lesson, Florence.
Yeah,
wow. And I suddenly looked at that whole book and was like, you could just name this book, subtitle, The Mystery of the Cross.
Dombey and Son. And you know, I've never even heard of that book till you mentioned it.
Oh.
I really never heard of it.
It's one of his early ones. He's got several early ones that are named after people that I kind of tend to forget, like Barnaby Rudge and Martin Chuzzlewit. And you just go, oh, okay, I'll get to them.
I'll get to them.
Yeah.
I love it.
But this one, it's funny because he does his Dickens thing. Sometimes you know where he's going, but a lot of times he's like, oh, you thought you knew, did you? Twist. You're just like, whoa, what? Edith, right. Hello. You know, that kind of thing. And But there were a couple of things at the end where it was, there was another little bit where somebody was talking about the same person who suffered a lot and was horrible before. And he says, "Ah, Miss Harriet, it would do us no harm to remember oftener than we do that vices are sometimes only virtues carried to excess." And that's, it all kind of all ties together at that point. It's like we screw stuff up so easily.
Yes, we do.
I don't know how we can even say where suffering comes from when so many times, I mean, yes, an earthquake, although fracking has caused one in Dallas. So there you go.
Did it really?
Yeah, that all those little earthquakes, people have been having doors slam and stuff where I live, and I don't live next to Irving, old Cowboy Stadium, you know,
yeah,
or old Texas Stadium, whatever it was. And yeah, been a bunch of earthquakes there, and a report just went in that said, yeah, we've studied it, said the geologist, and it's because of fracking.
Holy cow.
Yeah, specifically in that one place. So there was some fault or something that it really exacerbated. So we could cause earthquakes. But yeah, there's all kinds of stuff that we don't cause. But how many times do we cause our own suffering and then can't even see it till later?
That's right. Yep. Yep, we know not what we do.
That's for sure.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, but it's really the thing that's so fascinating about this book is how he managed to take all this and make that so much a part of the foundation and the anchor of the book and still have it be a real thriller mystery.
Yeah.
I said before,
yeah,
but
and that was something.
Amazing.
Yeah, so this guy, Michael Gruber, his first book was Tropic of Night. Which is the book before this one. So Tropic of Night was written in 2003, and then this one was in 2005. But if you look at his Wikipedia page, you find out that he wrote 15 books under the name or a ghostwritten for a person named Robert K. Tannenbaum. So some people may know who that is. I haven't read any of these books, but they're all thrillers, I believe. Or did you say they were court ones?
This said they were courtroom thrillers, I think.
Okay.
Now, and then I know that the Book of Air and Shadows, 2007, that's one that I saw a lot of buzz about. And I think Brian Alexander on Goodreads said he had read that one.
Okay.
And that's these are all standalone books because he's written several since then. Forgery of Venus, a novel about art forgery and time travel. Like, I haven't.
So, yeah, how can I not read that book?
I know, I should have read this.
And they're all ranked fairly well on Goodreads, so people enjoy them.
Yeah.
But yeah, but he has an
amazing
boy
background.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a. Okay, so he was in the Army as a medic. Well, first of all, I guess he wrote. He got a BA in literature, and so he wrote for magazines and things. Then he went back to school and got a second BA in biology. And then he went to the University of Miami and got a master's in marine biology. And then he was in the Army as a medic. Then he got a PhD in marine sciences for a study of octopus behavior. Then he was a chef at some restaurants. Then he was a roadie for rock groups. Then he worked for the county manager of Metropolitan Dade County as an analyst. And then it looks like he worked his way up. He was director of planning for the Department of Human Resources. Then he went to Washington and worked in the Carter White House Office of Science and Technology. Then he worked in the EPA as an analyst and as a speechwriter for the administrator. Then he was promoted to the Senior Executive Service of the U.S. and says the highest level of federal civil servants. And that's when he was contacted by Robert K. Tannenbaum to ask about if he'd be interested in writing some books. So he did that. He wrote 15 of those while all this is going on, I guess. Then he left Washington and went to Seattle, where he was a speechwriter and environmental expert. And then he's been a full-time writer since 1990. But it's just like...
Unbelievable.
Oh, my God. Gosh, and no wonder he can write about, the Catholic part I don't know about and voodoo, but all the rest of this stuff. What a career.
That is something else. Yeah.
I know. Rich and varied, I guess.
Yes, definitely worth reading.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Most yeah, and I noticed what's funny is I looked up, after I had finished it, I looked up your review on the Happy Catholic Bookshelf.
Oh,
and your first sentence had interesting in it. So you had a very similar response as I
have. Yeah, it's just a crazy book, and it's hard to really sum up. And really, the thing that made it so interesting to me was this Catholic stuff. And you can't even say I dug it up, because it's just everywhere.
That's right.
And for a lot of people, I guess this might be their main exposure to that thing.
Yep. It's actually in your second sentence.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, Valley of Bones by Michael Gruber is hands down one of the most interesting books I've ever read.
Okay.
That's awesome.
There you go.
I love it. That is great. Yeah, Happy Catholics Bookshelf. I don't know if we've mentioned that here.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
But yeah, it's over on Patheos.
Yeah.
I'll put a link to it in the show notes.
Okay, yeah, it has several people. I mean, I drop reviews in there, but, you know, you don't do many reviews, but yeah. You can do it. And then Jeff Miller, the Kurt Jester, does them. And also Joseph, I'm not going to say his name right, Renninger,
mm-hmm.
who's at Zombie Parents Guide. He does a lot. And Sarah Reinhart.
Cool.
And I have to say, I want to dedicate this podcast to Sarah, who, when I chose this book, I think a couple of years ago, dedicatedly went and read it, and then I changed my mind. And she's like, what? I read this 400-page book, and you're not going to talk about it? I mean, it was good, but come on.
Oh, so you made good. That's great.
I told her I'd get back to it. It took me a while, but I did.
I love it. That's funny.
Well, I can't tell everybody how gratifying it is when you see on Goodreads that you're going to talk about a book and somebody picks it up and starts reading it, like Joseph or Sarah or sometimes Jeff Miller or various people who will comment on the blog. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, we're making a difference.
That's neat.
And they're reading, if nothing else.
That's right. So. Fun. Makes it a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, cool. I liked it.
Good.
Highly recommended. Yep. Crazy book.
Good. I'm so glad you liked it. Because the more I was reading it, the more I was worrying. I was like, wow, this book is weirder than I remembered.
Yep, that's weird. How funny. All right. Anything else on that? Are we good?
Not for me.
Okay.
For cool. You?
So nope. I'm good too. That's definitely worth reading. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, do you have any final comments on how the Catholic faith is presented in this book? Because I think that would be the main overview that we might need. Than we've said already.
I liked how it was presented. I mean, it just gives you a lot of things to think about. I mean, you know, like what we talked about, but it permeates everything. You know, everything you read in this book is, you know, Catholics in some way. You look at it and... I was really amazed at how he could do what he did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else to say about it. It's just very interesting. I would love to write like that. It's very neat.
Okay.
Well, yeah, Thomas Merton quotes and
all
kinds of stuff.
He had everything, and we didn't. Yeah, it just occurred to me. We didn't even mention Jimmy Paz's old partner, retired partner, who. Super, is it Baptist or something?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Some or evangelical or something like that. And so they go see him to talk to him about stuff, and he's like, "Oh, I'd love to meet Emmy Lou. Sounds like my kind of people." You know, she gets it. And he's telling his own mystical story. So really, Christianity as believing in the mystical stuff that no one likes to talk about. Everybody likes to talk about helping people after a hurricane.
Yeah.
Oh, there's the, you know, Catholic services and all that, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
No one likes to talk about that other stuff that most people experience on some level.
Right.
No matter what you are. Hopefully not like these people. Nobody should change faces and growl at you and say legions there. If so, run away fast. Just like Legion. Did.
And have too many teeth.
Yeah. Oh, that's still terrifying.
Yes, indeed. That's funny. Well, cool. Okay, so next up, we have a movie, Frequency.
Ooh, yeah.
Yes, Dennis Quaid and Jim Caviezel. So good. Cool, and then after that, we'll read about another saint, Saint Francis of Assisi by G.K. Chesterton.
Yes.
So I feel that I know St. Catherine a little more, St. Catherine of Siena, after the podcast and this book.
Yes. Right. Well, and I downloaded the sample on the Kindle while I was waiting for the library book to get here. And I forgot. He's so good.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
I've got it on my Kindle as well.
Yeah, the and way then, he presents stuff.
Yeah, go ahead. Neat. And then the movie, Double Indemnity. Can't wait.
Oh. Billy Wilder at his best.
I love it. And then a book that just, you loved it. It was Mockingbird by Walter Tevis.
Yes, I just read it, and it was a truly astounding book that's going on one of my best of 2015 lists.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Cool. I can't wait to read that too.
Yeah. Science fiction.
Nice. I like
it.
In
the future. Yeah.
Well, cool. All right.
Okay.
So that's it for us today. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes. I hope there wasn't too much suffering involved, but if there was, it was good for you. Rest assured.
That's right. Oh, that's funny.
That's all we talked about.
Oh, that's too good. All right. Well,
so funny.
We'll be back in a couple weeks, folks. Thanks again
we'll
for
talk
everything.
To you again soon. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you.